kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Dad's Army podcast. Today is Saturday the 18th of August 2007. Very shortly I'll be joined by Tony, when we'll head over to the Dad's Army newsroom to see what's new in the world of Dad's Army. We then have some feedback that we've received from listeners that we'd like to share with you. And lastly, our featured episode this week is Put That Light Out, where Tony and I are joined once again by Paul Carpenter of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society to discuss this classic Season 4 episode.
So do you think you are kidding, Mr.
Hi there, James. Did you think we would make it to episode 7?
I have to admit, I thought we were lucky to make it past episode 3. it's great to record these.
I think episode 2 was our worst one. Anyway, enough of that. We've got some news items, and if I perhaps start off with the first item. I've been reading in the Dad's Army magazine, the Dad's Army Appreciation Society magazine. We've got the Dad's Army Christmas specials are out on DVD, but you've got to wait until 22nd of October for those. But 22nd of October, if you want to put that in your diary. Dad's Army Christmas specials, and that finishes off, I think, all of the Dad's Army episodes now.
There's been a lot of speculation about when this DVD would actually be released. Is Permission to Write, isn't it? That's what it's called, the magazine?
Permission to Speak,
beg your pardon, sir. Permission to Speak, sir. Okay. Does it state whereabouts that information came from?
Yeah, there's a lady called Carolyn Bartholomew. I think she's a bit of a friend of the Appreciation Society. She works at the BBC, so I think it's a fairly reliable source.
After the Nine Normal series were released, of course, there was no actual news about the remaining three episodes. And they were all good, I seem to remember. The Love of Three Oranges, My Brother and I, and Battle of the Giants were the episodes that formed the Christmas specials. But I have to say, I'm quite looking forward to seeing that on DVD.
And your favourite one is?
Out of those three?
Our favourite episode, yeah.
Oh, well, I think it's got to be My Brother and I.
Absolutely.
The same as you, yeah.
and say why, because I think it might be the same reason.
I'm certain. It's purely because you get to see Arthur Lowe's acting ability in a completely different role to that which we're used to seeing him in him playing Manor in.
You got it, yeah.
Thought as much. Okay, moving on. This is a little bit of interesting news. Dad's Army every now and again does get into the regular news, and UK Gold ran a fairly high-profile poll of the top 30 British comedies, which was the most popular of which was Monty Python. But the interesting part, which is why I'm mentioning this, is because Dad's Army didn't feature, not in the top 10, which, in my view, makes a joke of the entire poll. But that view is also reflected by Nick Ferrari on LBC last Monday, that's Monday the 13th, and he mentioned the poll, and he also mentioned that there was a couple of classics that weren't included, Dad's Army being one, so it's got some famous fans as well. Moving on to the Orient Express, I believe, Tony?
Oh, yeah. Back to the Appreciation Society again. I'm a member, James, are you?
Okay. I will be.
Well, it's just Quarters magazine. There was a little flyer inserted in it, and it's about... it's called the Glenn Miller Dad's Army Train. And there's a British Pullman from London, Victoria, to the Dad's Army Museum at Bressingham in Norfolk. And it runs on the 16th of October, Tuesday the 16th of October. It looks really good. I just gulped when I got to the price. before I say the price, I don't know if I've got permission to do this, but I'll just quickly say what's included. There's return travel on board the Orient Express, glass champagne with brunch on the outward journey, bus transfers between this station and Bressingham, glass champagne three-course dinner with wine on the return train journey, Glenn Miller Street Party concert at Bressingham. It goes on. There's quite a lot included.
Sounds excellent.
James, guess the price.
Okay, cheap day return from Victoria. Ooh, 30 quid.
Now, this is on the Orient Express, though.
I'm assuming we're talking hundreds here.
It's a lot, actually. It's £348 per person. To me, it sounds like an excellent trip. The price does put me off a bit, though. But
yeah, me too. Am I right in saying that there's some of the cast member will be accompanying people as well who book on that trip?
Yeah, they're not guaranteeing it, but they're fully expecting to see Frank Williams, the vicar, and Pamela Cundell, Mrs. Fox.
Okay. Well, it does sound like something that I would have been interested in, I think, until you mentioned the price. And it's a shame. Maybe they just do... I don't suppose they put a postal carriage on that that train, do they, that I can just sit in with all the mail? I suppose not, really. I'm a stupid boy. That's how I used to get home after having a few too many drinkers in London all those years ago.
I don't believe you.
Oh, it's true. It is true.
But, you came home once in the mail carriage.
I think we should move on here before too many of my secrets get made public. But yeah, it certainly sounds an interesting event, and sounds like an almost gold event that the Dad's Army Appreciation Society are organising there.
Well, I don't know if they're organising it. It's promoted by a company called Arena Travel, but certainly the Appreciation Society put the flyer in with their magazine, so they're obviously fairly keen on it. As I say, it sounds good if you can afford it.
Sure. Moving on then, almost our last news item, the Dad's Army stage play. It's been a regular topic on the podcast over the last few months. We've got just over 2 weeks to go, Tony, before it actually opens in Stevenage, in the Gordon Craig Theatre. Now, according to Calibre Productions' website, it starts touring on Monday the 3rd. And looking at the Gordon Craig Theatre's website in Stevenage, they've got tickets from the 5th. So there are still tickets available on the opening week, on the 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th of September. And I think there's a matinee on one of the weekdays, and also on the Saturday the 8th. And that's the one that Tony and I are attending, isn't it? I've got that right, haven't I, Tony?
We're going on the Friday, are we? Yeah.
Oh, we're going on the Friday. We're going on a Friday evening, I think. So if you have any plans, or if you have tickets to go and see the Dad's Army play in Stevenage on Friday the 8th of September, drop us an email at warmingtononsea333@yahoo.co.uk, and we'll have our voice recorder on us, and we would be really pleased to record the thoughts of some of the audience.
So, if you see someone there holding a microphone outside loitering at the end, steer well clear, because that'll be James
or Tony possibly. And lastly, this week in the news, we're going to announce that we're going to have our first competition. This is to win a copy of the first and second series of Dad's Army on DVD. And the question, Tony, would you like to read the question?
Okay, yeah, here it comes. Who was the only original member of the Dad's Army cast to have been a member of the Home Guard in World War II?
Okay, so if you think you know the answer, or you've got some time, you can do some research and try and find out the answer. Then again, if you can send your replies to or your entries to warmingtononsea333@yahoo.co.uk, if you can have those entries with us by the end of August, then we'll pull one of the correct answers out of the hat in a future podcast, and the person who we pull out, as long as it's a correct answer, will win a copy of the first and second series of Dad's Army on DVD. Anything else in the news bag this week, Tony?
No, James, that's all of the Dad's Army news, but we do have some feedback from one or two people who've listened to our podcast.
Our first piece of feedback is from Paul Thursden, who's emailed us before. He'll be coming a bit of a regular here, Paul. Hi, James and Tony. Thanks for the link to the BBC 7 Listen Again, which we posted on our website a couple of weeks ago now. I have since listened to both Boots, Boots, Boots and Sergeant Save My Boy. I hadn't heard either of these radio episodes before, very cleverly done. I think it was Michael Knowles who adapted the radio series, and yeah, it was, wasn't it, Tony? It was also Harold Snowd, I think.
Yeah, Michael Knowles and Harold Snowd.
They did the entire run, didn't they? I think they did. Paul carries on, and he says, "Was great to hear Ed O'Driscoll in the upcoming stage play. Wish I was able to go and see it. Maybe he will tour it round Australia one day. I really think it would do well down here." And it's interesting, actually, because our statistics, our listener statistics are growing, and the biggest growth area at the moment is Australia and New Zealand. So Paul carries on. Do you know if there's any cast member photos available yet? Would love to see the new Platoon lineup. Now, I don't think they're available yet, but I know that the photographer was going to go along to the rehearsals, which I believe is probably happening as we're recording. So I think it's probably going to be very soon. Ed actually said the first week in September. They should be available on Calibre Productions' website. So if you just keep an eye on our webpage, which is www.dadsarmy.podomatic.com, we'll keep that up to date, and we'll keep the link to Calibre's website live. And as and when Ed updates it, you can go along and take a look at the new Platoon, as you put it. And Paul rounds off again another great and entertaining podcast 6. Looking forward to podcast 7. And thanks very much for your compliments, Paul. There, that's it's really good of you to get in touch. Over to you, Tony.
We've got a bit of feedback from Paul Carpenter. Thanks ever so much, Paul. He writes, in answer to your podcast question regarding the stuntman used in Boots, 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 there was a stand-in for Arthur Lowe used in many episodes, and during the episode reviewed, he was the one who fell down the hole on the beach. Paul says stand-ins were also used during Nights of Madness, Fallen Idol, and The Day the Bloom Went Up, to name a few. Although Clive Dunn did many of his own stunts, sometimes a proper stuntman was used. Paul, thanks for that. James, I'll just mention the stuntman in Boots, Boots, Boots was Johnny Scripps, and he's the one who fell down the hole.
Oh, right, okay, because this is following a conversation that you and I had a couple of weeks ago, and you guessed, if I remember correctly, you guessed that it was the point at which Mannering fell down the hole, and you were quite right.
I think I could have done that.
Yes.
I could have fallen down a hole.
Well, yeah. I doubt whether it would take particularly great acting prowess, but then again, it was full of water, and it was on a beach in the sea, so it could have been quite difficult.
I've got to mention, sometimes my friend Brian listens to this podcast, and I've been walking along the beach with Brian when he has fallen down a hole dug in the sand, and I've been walking along side by side talking to him, and he has disappeared down a hole. I just mentioned that just in case Brian's listening.
I think I would have absolutely killed myself laughing had that been the case, because yes, it's funny in its own right, but comparing it to Mannering, anyway, no, it does sound quite funny. Our last email is from Carl Hinton, who also was picking up on our discussion about Boots, Boots, Boots. And again, I'm not sure if you remember, Tony, but we were talking about why the boots were brown for officers and not for other ranks. And Carl's done a little bit of research and sends in. Hi, James, I finally found the answer. British Army boots, otherwise known as ammunition boots, have always been traditionally black. However, during the reforms of 1908, brown boots were recommended as better camouflage, although best boots were still black. Carl goes into a little bit more detail on the history of it, which I won't read out. But I think the point here that I think I made last time as well, but this is proved it. Whenever Jimmy Perry and David Croft wrote about the seriousness of the war or actually presented some facts, they nearly always had it accurate, just to make certain that they could reflect the seriousness of the situation in which they'd set their comedy. And
did I miss that? Did Carl explain why officers had the brown boots?
No, nothing in particular. Oh yes, officers on the other hand bought their own footwear. And polish was still, put on footwear and polish, and still wear brown shoes with service dress. No, in other words, I don't think there's a particular reason, but we're assuming it's just to distinguish the two different.
Carl, you need to get back to us.
Well, thanks very much for everyone there, for the two Pauls and for Carl for getting in touch with us again. It'd be really good to hear anybody else's comments, either on things that we discuss or any other element of Dad's Army. Please send us an email, warmingtonandsea333@yahoo.co.uk. There's also an opportunity, if you don't want to send us an email, you can actually leave a comment on our website. If you go onto the website, which I mentioned earlier on, it's dadsarmy.potomatic.com. There's a halfway down the page on the right hand side, you can click on leave a comment, and you can have your comment pasted on what's called our shout out page, and there's four of you have done that so far, and so thank you very much indeed for leaving your comments. now we'll move on to discuss our featured episode this week, Put That Light Out.
Correction there, James. It's not Put That Light Out. It's Put That Light Out!
Are you really good?
Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with his gun.
I didn't know the lighthouse was flashing tonight. I haven't been notified.
Well, I saw the Home Guard lot going across at low tide.
What? Not Mannering's mob.
Well, that old Lance Corporal anyway.
Those ruddy hooligans! Put that light out! Put that ruddy light out!
Tony and I are joined again by Paul Carpenter of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, this time to share some thoughts of this week's featured episode, Put That Light Out. Welcome back to the podcast, Paul.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, nice to be back. Nice to be part of the podcast again.
Well, that's excellent. You've just heard a clip from our featured episode this week called Put That Light Out. It was chosen for us by Paul Thurston in Australia. So thank you for that, Paul.
Okay, guys. So... overall feelings on this particular episode. If we start with you, Paul, what do you think? Good episode, bad episode?
Well, I watched it again recently when I knew I was going to have to talk about it, which is always a good thing, I find.
Sure.
Yes, it. I think it struggles a bit in the middle, a bit in Lighthouse, running around the light. It just sort of dips a bit there. But there's some lovely lines, Mannering, and some nice bits at the beginning as well. And there's a lovely Fraser story, of course, which... always a bonus.
Indeed. Tony, what were your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I like the episode mainly, but I think because of the set, the scenery on this one, actually. I think the lighthouse is a good set. Mm-hmm. You get a good feeling about it. On the humour side, I think it's probably Godfrey's line when the lighthouse lights up Warmington on sea, and Godfrey sort of misses the point, doesn't see the danger in it, and sort of says, technical pretty or something like that. So, slightly less on the humour. I like it because of the scenery.
Yeah, sure. It's funny you mention the scenery, actually. I mean, perhaps, actually, Paul, you might be able to help us with this, because I'm not sure if this is completely correct.
Go on, then.
Paul Thurston, the chap who actually asked us to discuss this episode, mentioned in one of his emails that he thought the set was very similar, if not the same set, that was used in one of the Goodies episodes.
No, the set was specially made by, I think it was Paul Joel, and in one of the script books it describes how the set was made, and so it was manufactured specially for the episode. And if you notice watching the episode, you don't get the church hall scene, and the set was constructed where the church hall would have been. You get the side office and the ice cream parlour, which was obviously used part of the set where the church hall would be. So they've squeezed sort of three sets in, really, rather than two. And it was constructed using basically cardboard and normal set materials, basically. And it describes how they made the rivet effects by just painting over little knobs of wood to make it look like metal.
That's interesting. That's news to me. And hopefully, Paul Thurston, here I'm talking to, hopefully that answers your question. My feelings on this, I actually thought it was quite, when I got the request to discuss it, I have to think, oh no, this is not one of my favourite episodes. But when I rewatched it, for the same reasons that you mentioned earlier, Paul, I found myself actually warming to it, and I'd forgotten that there were certain parts of it that I did really enjoy it. And you mentioned the Fraser stories, as I think they're known as. I think this has got to be one of his early ones. I think he talked about Wally Stewart and Don't Forget the Diver, but I don't know whether this is actually the second one, but it's got to be
certainly one of the early ones, isn't it? Yeah.
And you know, it's so pivotal. I think from that moment on, from when he sits down and starts talking about this slivery thing, I think it infiltrates all of Pike's lines when he's in the lighthouse, and he actually genuinely creates that feeling of a little bit of tension. The audience,
yeah, the atmosphere. Yeah.
I think that part is absolutely brilliant. And from my memory, I mean, obviously I haven't watched them all recently, but that's certainly one of the better speeches, one of the more memorable ones for me. One of the other things that springs to mind on this one for me was. It doesn't degenerate into chaos so quickly as some of the other episodes. I think for about 20 minutes, Wilson and Mannering are actually quite calm And they're sitting in the office doing fairly mundane things.
That's right.
And they're completely unaware of the contrast of the absolute chaos that Jones is creating up in the lighthouse. And then everything comes to a crescendo at the end.
Yeah, it's cut between the two scenes quite a lot of cutting between the lighthouse and the office. you don't get too much of one scene, so it's obviously cut to keep the story moving along, I think.
Which I think it does. I think it does pretty well. The actual characters, I think, are quite strong in this as well. The way I look for it almost is to try and look for atypical lines for these characters. Excuse me. Walker actually gets quite a lot to say in this episode, and there's not that much he says that is deliberately humorous.
Well, no, he's bribing Mannering at the beginning, isn't he?
Yes, he is. I'm trying to remember that actual scene.
It's double standards, isn't it? It's Walker asking to be excused for a bit of time, isn't it? He asks to be excused. He says he will arrive late, and Mannering doesn't like that. But when Walker says that maybe he can get the whiskey or whatever it is, whiskey or gin or something,
yeah.
Wilson says, "I'll be back as soon as you can," then, or something like that.
No, you're quite right. It didn't come so immediately to mind when you mentioned that, Paul, but I do remember it now. The line that I was thinking of is when Mannering is talking about the unlikelihood of having Hitler arrive and, you know, I think dressing in disguise and staying in Warmington.
That's right. That's at the beginning part.
I think so. And Walker looks around and says, "Well, you know, why is that so unlikely?" That's exactly what Hess did. And again, there's no laughter after that line.
That's strange. That particular exchange isn't in the script. It's something that was added.
Oh, really?
Must have been a latest type. Yes, this episode has got quite a lot of script removed from it. If you compare it with the published scripts and the actual episode, there's quite a lot, and there's several funny lines, several funny exchanges between Mannering and Wilson that weren't ever used. In contrast to that, the Hess line. Was an addition, which is obviously something I worked on.
Oh, strange. Would it have been likely to have been added actually on the day, either from the characters, the actor's suggestion? Or
it was probably put in, I'd imagine, because if they cut out so much dialogue, they need to fill in, put a laugh in or something like that. And it's quite, if you look the way he says Hess, Mannering starts off saying something, then he goes back and says, he contradicts what he says about Hess. I think Walker says about Hess,
right.
Isn't it? I think it is. As if he's defending him. Not defending him, I should say. Yeah.
I see. Well, maybe that's after the allure of some alcohol, perhaps.
Can I ask a question? Do you mind if I just ask about Hess? I know that he was a German, and I know he was put in prison by the Allies, and he obviously came over to Britain. Did he come over to Britain to spy, or did he come over to Britain to defect?
I think he came to defect.
Yep, yeah, he did.
In Scotland, I think it was, wasn't it?
I can't remember quite where, but it's actually mentioned in other Dad's Army episodes as well, and I think it gets a mention in the movie. I can't quite remember. I think Mannering does one of his lectures when he says, it's quite clear the Germans are on the run, you know, they're leaving. The rats are leaving the sinking ship. Hess has already gone over. And I'm sure nuns are in that same speech, but because
not they always?
Yeah, well, they seem to be. Nuns seem to be featured quite prominently actually throughout Dad's Army, but I don't remember exactly what episode that was. Maybe it's something I need to go and look up. One of the other things that I think is really good about this episode is that you get to see Bill Pertwee acting without having to do lots of shouting.
No, he didn't shout once or twice at the end.
Well, he chucks in the mandatory argument, I think, whenever he's with Mannering, but it's because he's given a character to work with who's not against him, and that's the officer Albert, or Mr. Albert. I can't remember whether that was his first or second name.
Mr. Albert's,
yeah. Okay. And he seems quite, you know, open and candid, and that's quite a unique side to Hodges. I think I don't remember seeing too many examples of when he's just fairly relaxed and not desperately trying to.
It's with his own kind, I think. And it's with actually because he's chief warden, he goes into to see the other warden. I suppose he's in charge, and he asks for a cup of tea and gets it.
Yep, exactly. He demanded it, but it's a completely different side, and it's a way that Pertwee, I think, really. moved a character on from a caricature who's always arguing to just give that a little bit more depth. And I have to admit, I really do appreciate those kind of little touches, not just with Pertwee, but with the other characters as well. So, okay, anything else, Tony, that you were considering or that you wanted to mention, either about Hodges or what else did we mention? Pike's Slithery thing.
I suppose I like the Pike Slithery thing bit. Obviously they build up the story and then Godfrey knocks on the door. Would somebody mind opening the door? Or something? And I love that bit. And it's just a couple of bits in the episode.
I'm surprised Godfrey didn't want to go downstairs as soon as he got up the top.
I think he did, didn't he? Didn't they say something about, can I be excused? And
they kicked him up, didn't they?
Oh, is that what it was? Yes. Yeah. I knew they made some kind of joke out of it anyway. But I think, Fraser is the kind of silent architect of all of this. Well, I say silent architect, he's not silent at all. It's his story that creates all of the panic. Because Pike and Jones were reasonably normal until they heard that story. And the minute they start talking about the Slithery thing, then that's it. They start assisting in creating havoc on quite a scale. And as you mentioned earlier on, Tony, Godfrey is just totally... he's just completely unaware of what's going on. So I think a couple of the scenes up in the lighthouse are really good.
Why didn't they turn the light off? I can't understand it. They turned it on. Why didn't they turn it off again?
I think the switch. I could be wrong here, but didn't they say the switch didn't turn it off? The one that turned it on didn't turn it off.
Oh, was that not?
Because no, as you say, otherwise it would be. I would imagine, really straightforward.
Shorter episode, yeah.
Yeah. They go into a lighthouse. They turn it on. They turn it off. I think that'd be good. Good.
Well, there's a couple of good lines up in the... there's one where Pike says, I wish Uncle Arthur was with me, and then Jonesy says, no, I wish I was with him.
Which is actually quite... it's quite witty for Jonesy.
It's very... It's very, very... I thought it was quite funny. But I think my favourite line, it comes right at the end with Gordon Peters as the lighthouseman, when Mering is saying, where's the key? It's in my pocket.
Yeah, that's... It is brilliant, and it's quite typical of... of Gordon Peters' appearances. I mean, he was in four episodes, wasn't he?
That was payback because he was in one of the early ones and they put him on the cutting room floor.
Oh, really?
And Jimmy Perry and David Cross said, well, to compensate, we'll try and fit you in some future episodes, and true to their word, they did it. So
I remembered him immediately from the chap who changed Mannerin's door in Is There Honey Still for Tea? He was also in Put That Light Out, A Strike for Fraser, and Command Decision.
Those are the four
that I could think of, and he may have been in some others that I didn't notice. But he always plays that dour kind of guy.
Yeah.
But he's classically funny, and it's a good cameo. And of course, there's the other one, which is Avril Angers.
That's right, she's really good as well. She was in a lot of the radio shows, wasn't she?
It's funny, I mean, Tony is far more familiar with the radio shows than I am, but I knew she was in The Lion Has Phones as the same character as a telephone operator. Which radio shows was she in, Tony? Can you remember offhand?
Oh.
Look in my companion and find out.
Now you're asking. I agree with Paul. I only hear a name mentioned in the credits. My memory is failing me. I've got to say, though, I do love the bit where they're trying to get connected to the lighthouse. And I love the sort of standard Britishness that it's more than a job's worth to put through until Zip Walker comes on the phone.
Yeah.
Which immediately connects. That's a quality part of the episode, I think. Speaking to the telephone exchange.
To Frieda, the character she plays is Frieda, isn't it? So that's good. Okay, I think is there anything else here that that you?
Well, I think so. When Mannering tampers with the electrical box, he just runs characteristically, just says walk away, doesn't he?
Yeah, that is very unlike Mannering, indeed. The fact that he's destroyed something. there are some shows that you see time and time again where you get characters do things that are out of character, and it doesn't ring true, and it doesn't make sense. But when Mannering does that, you believe it completely. You don't think, what's he doing?
No.
I mean, you still buy it.
Yeah.
So it is interesting when he does that.
So, I mean, I'll ask you, both of you, who'd written wrote the episode, Perry or Croft? Because they wrote separately.
You go first, Tony.
I would just be guessing, I suppose. I mean, I met Mr. Perry, so I would say Mr. Perry.
I think
for no decent reason.
Something in my mind tells me it's a Croft episode.
I think it's a Croft episode.
Yes.
I think Jimmy Perry goes for more nostalgia, and David Croft goes for the more slapstick. If you look at his other things he's done, like Hello, Hello, Are You Being Served?
Yes.
That sort of thing. I think he goes more for the visual.
There is one small slapstick scene. Slapstick scene. Say that three times quickly. In this episode, and I can't quite remember what it is, but I do remember that it certainly is underplayed compared to some of the other ones, which I assume are Perez as well. So,
I would just add the idea. I've just read that the idea for the episode was from Hal Snowden.
Indeed, yes. And he's got a few credits at the end for that, hasn't he?
Okay. Alright, moving on then, just to wrap up this this conversation, if I can ask you first, Paul, in terms of all of the others, how many out of five, what would be your rating on this?
For that one, 3, I think.
3. Tony?
3.
3, I thought you'd gone there for a second.
It just reflects the fact that the others are so well written, some of the others are so much better, rather than that one's a bad... I mean, that one would trout any current comedy, I think, on TV.
Well, so, I would certainly agree with that. I think it's hard. When we get into rating these, and when Tony and I discussed this right at the outset, it's a shame, because if we end up giving something a 1 or a 2, it sounds like it was a really poor episode, and it's not the case. It's just in context with the other episodes, and some of them are written far better than others. But bearing that in mind, I think I would probably go for 3.5. I've decided to allow myself... Much. I've just decided to allow myself a half. because it's... I think had I had this conversation with a pair of you before I'd watched it again, I'd have probably said a 3. But I actually enjoyed it more than I expected to. So.
It's got quite a flat ending. Like it should end about a minute or two before it actually does, because it just sort of stops.
Yep.
And not in a laugh and not any punchline, it just stops.
No, you're quite right, and the audience seemed to be taken by surprise as
well. They think, oh, is that it? You know,
it's
not a laugh. It should have laughed. It's just, I think it finishes with him wiping his face and putting on his helmet, which is a visual gag in sort of the half light doesn't tend to work.
But even so, again, I like that just because of its difference. I mean, most of the others either end on something where I'm in tears, or you know, very occasionally you get your poignant ending.
They're my favourites.
Well, I've said to Tony, whenever they do straight acting, they're the moments that I appreciate the most. And going off subject just a little, but certainly in Absent Friends, some of John Laurie's acting is fantastic. Sergeant Wilson's Little Secret again, and Getting the Bird with John Le Mesurier.
Mum's Army.
Yep. Oh, there was
at the end.
Those are my favourites. They really are. So I certainly agree with you there.
James, can I just ask Paul a quick question before we wrap this up? How are you so knowledgeable, say, like, about the scenery, and how did you get to that?
Knowledgeable about scenery because I've read sort of bits and pieces about not in various publications and the snippets here and there. And if you look at all the books or read all the books, the sort of information crops up in maybe just a line or a paragraph somewhere, and you can sort of put 2 and 2 together. And I've seen some of the actual original drawings for the sets as well, which are quite interesting.
And how did you get into Dead Zone?
I don't know. I remember watching them in black and white on the telly.
Yeah.
Mind you, didn't get a colour telly till 1990, so... No, I do remember watching... I remember watching Godfrey's Cottage when it first came on. So I remember the rotating greenhouse or summer house.
That's stuck in my mind. We talked about that the last podcast.
But that's one that's really stuck in my mind. And I've been a fan of, I don't know in time when I haven't been into it, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks very much indeed, Tony, as always, and Paul, in particular, for coming on and guesting. Much appreciated.
That's all right. Anytime.
Wonderful. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, we do hope you've enjoyed our 7th Dad's Army podcast. We're going to be back in 2 weeks' time, That'll be the 1st of September. We're going to be talking about the episode A Soldier's Farewell. We're always grateful for your feedback. If you can do it by MP3 format, even better. So email it to us if you can. If you're even better technology and you can send us your comments by MP3, please do that as well.
Now that would be great. It'd be great to include some of our listeners' views vocally rather than just reading out your emails. Don't forget, the BBC 7 plays are still playing every Friday night. Last night was Uninvited Guests, and next week is A Brush with the Law. That's on the 24th, which is an exceptionally good episode, if I remember correctly, on Audio Tony.
A very good one indeed.
And the week after that, which is the day before you can download episode 8 of our podcast, is actually A Soldier's Farewell. So our featured episode next week is going to coincide with BBC 7's broadcast.
Don't forget the competition that we mentioned earlier. Please email us if you know the answer to that question.
Okay, and the question, just to remind you, was who was the only original cast member who was actually in the real Home Guard in World War II? If you can email us your answers, warmingtononsea333@yahoo.co.uk. I think that's just about everything, isn't it, Tony?
Brilliant.
So we'll speak to you all in a couple of weeks' time.
Do you think you are giving Mr. Hitler if you think old England?
So anyway, we've got some news items. I think we're starting off with.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to start?
Nope.
I thought you were going to start.
Oh dear!
You were going to start off with a Christmas special.
No, that's you. That's me. You.
It does say me.